Welcome to the Mystery College Podcast. This is Jake Zen, and today we're talking with Aaron Ellis. Aaron Ellis is a polymath and an expert in his fields. He is renowned as a mental and strength coach, martial arts instructor, and author of multiple fitness and conditioning books, including titles like Absolute Core, The Manual for Developing Unreal Core Strength, and Ultimate Kettlebell Workouts for Fat Loss, Fitness, and Conditioning. Hailing from Queensland, Australia, Aaron's expertise extends to clinical hypnotherapy, where he specializes in helping athletes achieve mental mastery and peak performance. He also offers online courses and seminars. His topics span from kettlebell training, Muay Thai techniques, and hypnosis for sports. He has a distinguished background as a former Muay Thai athlete, holding Queensland and two Australian ISKA titles. Aaron now imparts his knowledge on mental mastery and rapid skill development. He leverages his clinical hypnotherapy skills to assist individuals, including fighters, in conquering stress, dispelling negative thinking, and boosting confidence. For over two decades, Aaron has dedicated himself to the study and application of rapid skill development. His profound understanding of biomechanics, coupled with specific verbal prompts, results in enhanced speed, power, technical efficiency, and more potent strikes. Aaron's not only a clinical hypnotherapist, but also a coach who can reliably eliminate stress, obliterate negative thinking, ignite motivation, and cultivate natural confidence while elevating physical performance. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
It's a pleasure having you here. So, Aaron, you're recognized as a polymath with expertise spanning from martial arts to clinical hypnotherapy. Could you share with us what drove you towards having such a diverse set of skills?
Just became, when I was at school, I lacked confidence, and martial arts was a way for me to improve my physical abilities to become a bit stronger. So I initially started with some Taekwondo and then ventured into the Muay Thai. And it was after about a year of Muay Thai training, my coach said, "Do you want to jump in and have a competition?" And I thought, well, this is the best time to actually test yourself of how your training's been going. So long story short, I was quite gifted in my Muay Thai, and I had five fights, five wins, achieved a Queensland title and an Australian title after seven fights. And then my total career was only short. 14 fights with 12 wins and 2 losses. And my last fight was an actual loss of an Australian title in New South Wales. And then from that time on, I decided that I wanted to delve into other martial arts. So from the Muay Thai aspect, it was more so you learn a skill and you learn to improve it. And each day you get better at it, you do more and more. And then I wanted to expand into some more traditional martial arts, so I did what I call a little bit of martial arts shopping. So I went and explored some Tong Long, some Wing Chun, some Ba Gua, Tai Chi, and I found that I really loved the concepts that these guys had, but everyone was telling me it was going to take me a long time to even grasp these fundamentals. And because I'd already been doing Muay Thai for over 10 years at the time, I didn't feel I wanted to invest myself from the very start again. And then just by a coincidence, I'd been learning Russian kettlebell training. And on one of Pavel Satsulin's sites, he mentioned Vladimir Vestelit and a Russian martial artist and just some push-up techniques to strengthen your hands. So I decided to have a little bit of a look, and there was something about this Russian martial art that seemed to encapsulate a lot of the internal principles that I'd seen, but it was more very freestyle and very unchoreographed. So I started to, show my friends, and I said, there's got to be something to this. But everyone looked at it and saying, these guys just look like they're falling over. They don't seem to be really reacting. But there was just still something there. So I ended up doing some research and found out there was one guy in Australia named David Quayle. And he's a martial artist and also a Kenpo karate instructor in Queensland. And he'd actually been training with Vladimir for over 10 years. So I contacted him, and he led me to another instructor who introduced me to Sistema. And that's where my internal art started to flourish. Because initially, when people look at Sistema, they think it's just another martial art. It's very freestyle. But when we look deep within the principles, we're focused on breathing, structure, movement, and relaxation. And when we say relaxation, we're not talking about being sloppy. We're talking about an internal type of relaxation where one is strong yet relaxed. So the first thing I did with this guy was I said, okay, I've been doing Muay Thai for a while. I want to throw a kick at you and let's see how you deal with it. So I threw my strongest Muay Thai kick, and next thing you know, I was on the floor and I was convinced. So I started training Sistema, and because there were no other instructors around, I just started my own study group. So I started pulling friends in, and over the time and over the next 5 years, I became the study group coordinator. And then eventually I became instructor in training under Vladimir Veselyev to actually teach Sistema. So during my Sistema training, I'd always had this background of the deeper parts of these Chinese martial arts and how do they what I'm doing. And then that's when I came across Mark Rasmus. And I was watching one of his videos, and then he actually mentioned at the end of the video that how people that do Sistema often grasp these concepts quite easily because of the previous training. Started really looking into that and ended up enrolling in one of Mark's courses. Also enrolled in one of his students' courses, Dinesh Kumar, and that has been instrumental in my learning. And then now I'm just about to share what I've been doing, and just to encapsulate all the stuff that I've learned over the years to help people progress in their martial arts journey. But that doesn't mean that I want to teach people techniques, but I want to show them how they can improve what they already do. Because Sistema is like an operating system. So instead of giving someone a program which you're stuck to, I'm giving you the code where you can write the script. You can write the program. And when you have these tools of the underlying code of what the martial arts is about, you find that you can really demonstrate that in really unique ways rather than being stuck in a certain form of technique where you have a stack full of tools where you need to bring those tools out at the right time against the right technique. So I hope that gives you a little bit of an introduction about my martial arts.
Absolutely. That gives a huge scope of martial arts. And, you know, it's cool seeing as a Muay Thai athlete and champion, and then also moving into Sistema, practicing that and finding a bridge between more formal martial arts and also internal martial arts with Sistema, and then some of Mark Rasmus's work, and then Dinesh Kumar's. It's great seeing how all these things overlap. So I'm really wondering how your, like, both your competitive experience, but also just your internal martial arts practice that you do, has influenced your approach to your coaching and mental training for your clients, both with hypnotherapy and for the elite athletes that you also help.
So I often find that when we're training athletes or people in general, and when we're talking about techniques and such, most people have a gross technique of they know how to do the technique. But then when we start to get them to slow down and start to really internalize things and to find out where the power is coming from, where the biomechanics are coming from. And I often use a lot of analogies when I'm training. For example, when we hit with a hammer and we're about to hit a nail, we never grip that hammer too tight, and we just use enough power to let the power go through. So using that analogy, I can say that when someone's throwing a punch, we can't tense the fist too tight right until the end, because otherwise we're actually slowing that punch down. So using these internal concepts that I've learned, I found that I can impart a contrast between people. So I'll say, this is how you're doing it now. Feel that. Now let's try this. And what is the difference? And often they'll go, wow, it seemed easier. It seemed. And then I'll say to them, what are you doing? And then they'll describe to me that, okay, I'm doing this, this, this. And that's where the internal martial arts come into play. It's not an instructor telling you you have to do this. It's a coach being able to coach you to internalize, you to adjust your own internal changes. And I found that from the Muay Thai background of physically being punched and kicked and being in competition, and then going to something like Sistema, and then integrating that with Tai Chi, Qigong, and internal martial arts, I feel that it's like you've got a car, and every time we want to make the car go faster, we add something to it. We might add the exhaust. We add a new carburetor. And all these little things, these spark plugs, are very similar to the extra things of the internal martial art. They're becoming icing on top. So it's not that we're relying on these internal things, where you'll often see on YouTube an internal martial artist demonstrating a rappel or pushing off a student, and you'll get comments saying, this isn't going to work in real life. But they need to understand what the concept is and what the context is. That context at the time is showing how we can do that. But when we integrate that with all of the other aspects of our art, that's when things truly start to shine. And things don't need to be perfect in that moment, but once you've added all of these things up of good structure, good breathing, general relaxation, movement, you have enough there that makes the car run smooth or your body run smoothly, and you can really perform to that next level. And then once we've got the body feeling what it needs to do, then we need to go in and say, so what's stopping you from doing this? And then we need to ask the client, the student, the athlete of what's actually preventing you from doing this, and get them to delve deep within inside themselves to realize that there's nothing stopping them from moving forward except for past experiences which are associating with future experiences. So my goal is to get people into that present moment of when you're performing, singing, coaching, being an athlete, you're in that present moment right then doing what you need to do, not worrying about what might be, what could be.
Right. You need to be completely in the present, completely in the zone. And all the preparation work is done before, all the refinement, all the internals, and also the gross movements as well. I wonder too, if you're bridging the physical training and the mental training, I'm wondering how do you incorporate mental mastery techniques into the physical fitness and conditioning training that you either offer to clients or in your own process?
So once again, with physical performance training, and let's focus on something, say, as lifting a weight, or let's say something even simpler. Someone wants to do a one-arm push-up, and at the moment they're finding that one-arm push-up hard. And because it's hard, it creates mental resistance, and we have to overcome that mental resistance just to actually physically perform. So then what we can do is we can actually say, so what does it feel like to do a two-arm push-up? And what's that feeling? And feelings become emotions, as we know. And these emotions can drive us. So we have emotions of happiness, performance, confidence, and also the negative emotions. So if we can just associate, for example, that feeling, what is that feeling of how easy it is to do a two-arm push-up? And then we start to feel that, and then you start to embody that same feeling with what it would be like to do a one-arm push-up. And by changing the feeling and the perception of what that exercise could be, the one-arm push-up becomes easier and you can instantly push out more repetition. And this can be the same thing as doing weights. You may be going through a new one repetition max and you're thinking, well, this is going to be hard. I haven't done this before. But if we take a few moments to go deep within ourselves and retain the feeling of accomplishment and what it was like to get that last peak, we get into that peak performance state again. And when we get into that peak performance state, the emotions come up, we start to get peaks of adrenaline, and we can start to perform. And then that mental performance fuels the physical performance that we've already worked on.
So the mental performance fuels the physical performance even further. And is that what does that process look like when you're using hypnotherapy with a client or yourself?
So when I'm talking to a client, for example, talking to a client that's having a Muay Thai fight coming up, and there may be some issues, not even to do with that Muay Thai fight as such. A client maybe this is the first time that the gentleman has had a fight camp without his girlfriend because he's had a separation, and he wants to know how can he focus on his fight camp but not have these emotions lingering of his former girlfriend. So once again, I start to talk and start to question him of why he's doing this. What is his motivation? Why does he really want to do this? And ask questions like, why don't you just stop? Why don't you just give up? And we start to dive into the real intrinsic motivation that that person has. And then they start to give me their own reasons why they need to keep going. And then in a way, I'll start to challenge them when I know that they've got solutions. And say, but before you told me that this is going to affect you. And then somehow they start telling me, but no, this is what I really want to do. And the emotions start to change. And then when those emotions have changed, that's when I'll say, okay, how are you feeling now to how we started before? And they'll start telling me that they're often feeling lighter. They may feel those energetic butterflies. And that's when I'll start to take them into a deeper trance where we'll slow down the heart rate, slow down their breathing, and then start to visualize the performance and visualizing that performance before it happens. So as you might know that there was a study done with elite runners and they were just sitting in a chair and they had electrodes on their legs. And just by thinking and visualizing the run, the muscles were twitching. And we start to actually believe that we are there in the competition. So the more that I can have that client visualize that competition, especially in real time, so we're saying that you're not just in there winning, kicking ass, but you can see yourself taking those hits, responding to them well, moving, breathing, being composed, being furious, but being focused. And they get into this certain sort of mindset, which becomes the flow for them. And then finally, I lock that in with generally the breath. I find that's the best thing because before the competition, people are often breathing, they're a little bit shallow breathing. But then by locking in a nice slow breath technique and locking that or anchoring that with the emotion, the trigger comes back. And I've often had a video of someone that sent me like, I can't believe it. This is before me 2 minutes ago. And then I did this breathing and I look like I am focused and ready to go. I don't know what you did, Aaron, but it was just awesome. So it's being able to teach the person to how to use their own subconscious mind, imparting triggers for themselves so that I don't need to be the coach all the time, but I'm giving them tools that they can go, ah, I understand how this worked. So they can do it for a while, and then they may need a little bit of a top up, and they come back and say, Aaron, and then new problems popped up. How can we work with this?
Yeah, and then new problems pop up, and then they, then you guys work through them together, and then they come out on top. That's awesome. That's awesome.
We
And
could almost say that every problem is a knot. And we need to untie those knots. And unfortunately, you'll untie a knot to find out there was a knot underneath that knot. And sometimes it may take a few sessions to get what we call that root knot, that knot that was holding everything together. So sometimes the longer a person's been holding on to an issue, the harder it is to untie that knot because it's become part of them. It's become part of their belief system. It's become part of them.
And I want one thing I'm curious about too is like it's super important for athletes and for everyday individuals alike to condition themselves to have the best performance in their job or their or their sport. But what's also important as releasing things that are inhibiting them from growth or from being fully present is also learning how to acquire skills and acquire new skills. Because if they can acquire, if athletes or individuals can acquire skills at an accelerated rate, then they can outpace competition, or they can just continually grow exponentially. So for two decades, you've studied rapid skill development. So I'm wondering what key principles you have found to be the most effective for your fitness, for internal martial arts, and just accelerated learning in general.
It has a lot to do with contrast. So the feeling in a person of what feels good, what feels better, and what feels incorrect. And one of my main principles would be relaxation. Everybody believes that to increase their power, they need to increase tension. And they often squeeze so much to try and build up that power, they actually hold themselves back by tensing the opposite muscle. So often by telling people simple things like, I just want you to relax, breathe, and instead of going harder, I want you to go faster, yet lighter. And we find that for some reason, because they've relaxed more, they've increased speed times acceleration, all of a sudden we start getting new sounds of that hitting on the pad, it becomes deeper. And then once we have that basic of, okay, how did that feel? Now I want you to go back to what you were doing before. And they get that, And we need to really get these aha moments in there too. That's what it was like before. This is what it's like now. And they'll often get them to go, so this is a good feeling. Let's do that. Let's drill that in. And let's go back to what you were doing wrong before. And then I want to get to the point where they almost had trouble going back to doing it wrong because it feels so wrong now. So when it comes to this rapid skill development, it starts with their gross motion. Let's start with a boxer and their stance. Everything comes from the feet and up. So we start to find out where is their balance point? How are they moving? Are they keeping their legs wide enough? And then starting to feel, let's do this way. How does that feel? Let's do it this way. How does it feel? Now, I wonder if we incorporated this extra thing such as breathing while you're stepping, would that make a difference? Give it a go. And I'll just give it a go. And then once again, by them giving it the go, and me not just saying, watch this, all of a sudden they have these enlightening moments of, wow, that seemed effortless. Is that right? Do it again. Now let's do it how you were doing it before. And you see that I'm repeating this contrast of not doing it right, doing it right. And then that seems to come with when we're doing internal martial arts, when I'm just getting someone to work a very strong structure beyond an indefinite weight. So instantly we start with the biomechanical structure of the spine. But then we need to start to relax things and start to relax the internals, relaxing the lower abdomen, the gooch, the anus. So what I'll often do is you're feeling good now. What would happen if you just squeezed all of your bottom and then released it like you were just the ones at the toilet? And then all of a sudden they'll go, whoa, it feels like the weight's disappeared. Okay, hence it again. Now, what about if we did that and we added the abs in as well, and we both released the gooch and the abs? Now we've got two things. And then layer upon layer, what would it be like now if we relax the shoulders like we relax the abs? And once again, adding this layer upon layer, incorporating the breathing and the contrast, I find that people really get a massive increase in their learning development fast.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the points you make about physiology are really awesome. And I think it's something that's very underlooked in accelerated learning communities is making sure you're physiology is aligned, that you have enough relaxation, but also enough, not integrity, but strength in the body, but also relaxation, not sloppy relaxation, but firm relaxation. and to clench and then release, tense and release, layer by layer. And then that's a really powerful mechanic to release on things as well. So that's awesome that it goes back to what we were talking about previously. Where do you find there the most complement, how hypnosis and rap accelerated learning, where do you find that there's some, how do they complement each other?
So once we've done the physical aspects of learning and they've understood these micro internal changes that seem to give massive results, such as when someone's throwing a kick, I can just say, imagine leaving that kick there just for half a second before you let go. And for some reason, that change in intention allows that hit or that baseball bat to penetrate the target. So once we've got that feeling, then we can go back to our hypnotherapy I don't even call it hypnotherapy in this time. I'll just call it a deep conversation where we're starting to, once again, slow things down. And I start to ask them questions of, so really thinking about what we did before, how did that change? And I want you to take your time. And they'll start to, and really start to contemplate. And when we start to contemplate, I'm causing stillness within their body. And so many people lack this stillness. So once we do any type of learning, we need to get the stillness to actually retain that information, to lock it in. And often that will be at the end of the day when we may have been studying something, we go to bed, and before we go to sleep and we're in that dreamy state, we're starting to mull over all these things we learned. Well, we can actually do that a lot quicker by just stopping, slowing down, breathing, and increasing that internal stillness, and then focusing on those feelings that we had earlier. And then once we increase those feelings, they become triggered and anchored within ourselves through maybe that breathing, or maybe it was that feeling of when I let go of the stomach, when I felt like a Santa, whatever that feeling was for you, then they can start to link that back to the physical performance, and it becomes much quicker and much easier. So reflecting on the internal things, we start by someone placing a lot of pressure on you. You're feeling their pressure, and we need to work through our body to release. And finally, we get to the body where we're, okay, I've released enough. I can feel the pressure's dissipated. Now I'm going to release even more, and we'll start to get the partner to rappel off us. But we want to get to the point where instead of having to wait for the partner to touch us, what was that feeling like when it was actually already happening? So I get my students to get to that feeling that it's already happening, and then the other student touches them. And then instantly they find like, wow, I was already there and I didn't need to adjust, and everything starts to happen quicker. And to the point where the subconscious is, they touch. Oh, and that's what happens, rather than, okay, this is what I have to do. This is what happens.
Instead of this is what I have to do, it happens. They enter the zone. It's all like a program that's been set in advance. Yeah. And all they have to do is activate it, and then they're running the program.
Yes.
Like a computer operation or a computer app.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, and it sounds like you've helped like many, many athletes and individuals overcome their stress by conquering their stress using these tools and strategies, and also boosting their confidence. So what are some common mental barriers that your clients typically face, and what are some strategies you use with your clients to help them overcome their obstacles, their challenges?
So once again, a lot of people are attached to the past, and the past become such a part of them, because when that trauma happened, that thing that they don't even know about, for example, someone goes to do a speech on stage, all of a sudden this fear comes over them and they're like, I'm just not doing this. And then we realize, and we talk about this later on, we find out that many years ago when they were at school, they jumped up and the kids had a bit of a laugh at them. And they weren't even laughing at them. They just happened to be laughing. But that child associated that laugh with them getting up on stage. And to protect them their whole life, every time they go to that little point, their subconscious is like, hey, no one's going to laugh at you. So I'm going to stop you from doing it. So often by finding out where was this trigger? What was that happened? And what was the emotion that you were in then compared to how you can look at that now? Because over time, our perceptions change of an event compared to how that event was. And when we look at something in a different way, we can look at it from a distance and we can look at, okay, maybe it was not quite as bad as I thought. Or maybe I could reframe this to, okay, it was bad, but due to that, it has helped me become who I am today. So by often getting people to let go, when I get people to let go by, once again, imagining getting into this point of super calmness and stillness and feeling, what is it like when you let something go? You've got a piece of rubbish in your hand and you're on a cliff and you just let it go and it's gone. You can feel what that feels like, letting it go. Or when you've got a backpack on and it's heavy and then you just dump it on the floor. And these gives us certain feelings and emotions of what letting go is. And then I find that the person will start to associate their feeling of letting it go. So what does it feel like if you were to let this go? And not often do things go just like that, but it starts to change their perception of that event over time. And we start to paint over that picture. So it's almost like in the brain, we have a forest and we have one path that's well-worn. And that's the path that we always take. And that's the path of anxiety, the path of, I'm not sure, can I do this? And then there's the other path in the brain, which is sometimes we cut through and we go, you know what, I'm doing this because I really want to do it. And we'll start to cut away that path a little bit. But it's a hard path to take because it's not well worn. But by getting back into these points of stillness and feeling those points of what I want to achieve, how am I going to feel, and start making more positive changes in the present, we start to make that track of positivity easier. We start to take the well-worn track less. And as we start to take the new track, the old track, in a sense, starts to get overgrown. And the new track starts to become well-worn. And it becomes an effort. We don't just instantly be able to change our minds because often our personality and our thoughts and beliefs have become etched over years of our emotional trauma, of our likes, our wants, and what we do. But by slowly making a decision to take this new path, I find that eventually we realize that, oh my God, I'm actually taking this path without thinking anymore. And it becomes subconscious. Mm. Like, I love these analogies. When we started to ride a bike, we jumped on the bike and we had to think of the balance, the brake, the pedal. Everything was so much to think about. But then one day you jumped on the bike and just went down the road and you weren't even thinking about the bike because it was etched in, it became part of you. And these are the same as positive thoughts, positive emotions, and new beliefs.
Mm, absolutely. Like those, there's the paths are well worn or they're new, but after you've gotten into the habit or something, it can be harder to break that habit. But with the skills, the tools, the techniques that you provide, you can help people break like habits that are really etched. You can help people take new paths and new courses in their life. And you've written a lot of books and also you've created online courses as well. Like, you made the Absolute Core book, the kettlebell, Ultimate Kettlebell Workouts. And you also have some online courses. I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more about some of your course and book offerings too.
So regarding my books, I've got a regarding Absolute Core, I was fed up with doing standard ab work sit-ups, doing multiple amount of reps to get results. And then through deep study, scientific and experimentation, I started to look at the way that the abs truly contracted. And they contract in a straight line. They brace. Never in life do we crunch our abs as a way to build them up. I'm sorry, as a way of using them. So I wrote Absolute Core as a way to basically put my thoughts on paper and found that people have got massive results rather than doing hundreds of sit-ups through doing as little as three sets of five. You can get absolutely massive gains in strength and actually build up to some quite impressive feats of the dragon slag, human slags, planches and things like that by learning how to integrate your core strength. Another book I wrote was just how to run a Systema class. So I noticed that a lot of people, they're very interested in Systema, but because I found that a lot of people that have commented on it haven't actually experienced Systema themselves. They've often watched some videos and don't understand the concept, or that maybe it was a learning environment where there was a, not so much a technique, but a concept that was being shown. And people often think that that needs to be used in a martial arts concept. So I decided to write, okay, if you want to start a Systema class and become an instructor like I did, and you don't have any friends, where do we start? And just put very basic drills of how people can start with breathing, how they can start to improve their structure, moving, and how they can get a friend in and start pushing and basically starting to learn about yourself, because Systema basically cuts down to being the system, which is a system of principles. So we learn how to move and how to react rather than how to act and how to, you know, do this block after that. Then regarding some online courses, my courses are, I don't run them publicly. People need to contact me for those. And primarily they're to do with deeper skills of the kettlebell lifting, how to lift them correctly, how to get more performance out of your kettlebell. Because once again, we have lots of kettlebell training out there, but it's the fine, it's the dot, the details that really add the bang to your buck, especially with kettlebells. So I find with kettlebells, the number one thing for athletes is improving their ballistic power, their explosiveness. And that's through doing the kettlebell snatch or the kettlebell two-arm or one-arm swing. But generally, because people haven't been taught how to actually activate the posterior chain, they'll often move the knees forward. They'll use a lot of the quads and they won't actually get the power benefit out of the kettlebell. And hence they say, I used kettlebells, didn't do anything for me. But when you start to use kettlebells correctly in just such a short time, we start to activate all the muscles that we don't see in the mirror. The posterior chain, the lower back, the lats, all of these muscles that truly generate power, but don't actually increase any muscle mass. And by doing them correctly and adding these little tiny things I'll tell them at the top of that contraction, we want to flex everything like a mouse trap, the whole body for a split second, and then we turn it off. Because there's two sides of the performance coin. There's tension and there's relaxation. So there's no good being able to hit with massive amounts of tension, but your fist is still there for 2 seconds after the punch. Where if we can imagine that Muhammad Ali type of punch, which just went from nothing, bang, in and out like a spring, that's what the kettlebells create, that elasticity, that explosiveness where we go on, off in a second. And that allows you to repeat that power, bang, 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 like a machine gun. So I find that when people have really worked the kettlebell swings, Muay Thai in particular, their knees, their kicks just become phenomenally powerful. And especially when we start to integrate those with the power techniques of relaxation, biomechanics, things like that, it just becomes this complete package of performance mentally and physically.
Yeah, having an explosive ballistic power, and that's cool that kettlebells are one of the few weights that exercise free weight exercises that really train those internal muscles that are not on the surface, that, like you'd mentioned, and that help you with ballistic force, which for striking or for explosive power, or even for intrinsic martial arts like elastic force qigong with Mark Rasmus or with Dinesh Kumar. I mean, there's huge opportunity application for that.
Even without the ballistic applications of the kettlebell, just by general use, cleans, presses, it builds functional strength, it builds your joints, it really builds the fascia of your body, and you just tend to get a really strong internal part of your body without that massive overload of big muscles that actually may slow you down.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what your personal philosophy is around fitness, mental health, and personal well-being. Like, how do those things intersect and weave with each other?
So first thing is, I never train. I only ever practice. So I have this little thing where just during the day, I may go, okay, I might do a couple of one-leg squats, see if I can still do them. Then I just forget about it. Then I walk past my chin-up bar and I might do it three or four chin-ups. So the way that I tend to be is rather than spend an hour each day of really working something, I just become active completely. So watching TV while I'm using that time, I'll sit there and do some stretching, some breathing, and try and use my time efficiently. So if I'm doing some walking, I'm not only walking, but I'll incorporate some breathing exercises of inhale for 5 steps, exhale for 5 steps. And then finally, when it comes to my night routine, I really like to slow things down. And that's often through just some personal like yoga stretching, incorporating some breathing and just some stillness work where I'll slow down the physical body first. So then I find that when I'll actually sit into maybe a meditative pose, the body's a bit more settled. We start to have the thoughts start to flow in a little bit more, but because we're not worried about the physical as much, we can tend to let them go, start to focus, consolidate daily thoughts, and then go to sleep and actually wake up restful rather than allowing yourself to consolidate while you're sleeping. I find that it's best to consolidate the daily activities when you're actually not in bed.
Best to consolidate the daily activities when not in bed, as in like reviewing over your thoughts, like the what went on with your day, or like when you wake up in the morning, like morning.
So even, if you, before we get into bed, you can even just sit on the side of your bed for just 2 to 3 minutes, breathing, and you'll notice those thoughts will start to come through already. And then when a few of them will come through, and then you'll find that now when you lie down, your body will be able to relax a bit more just because you've had some mental time to release. Because our body tends not to release until our mind starts to let go. And when our mind starts to let go, that's when So when the mind starts to let go is during when we start to breathe, we start to slow down things. But if we're still in that really hyped mindset of, oh, gee, this happened during the day, it starts to become more than 2 minutes. It becomes 10 minutes, half an hour of laying down, rolling around, where, crazy enough, sitting in a posture, not sleeping, you'll find that 2 to 3 minutes, and all of a sudden, you know what? I'm really tired now. And you'll lie down and you'll have a much better sleep. And then, if you want, when you wake up in the morning, stretch. We've been stuck in that bed all day, and just make your own Tai Chi, your own Qigong. Reach, stretch, breathe, squeeze. Imagine you're waking up. Oh, do a couple of squats. And then just like, what am I going to do today? What is my preparation? Close your eyes. Hey, I'm going to achieve this. And you're done. You can spend half an hour on this stuff, but the truth is, all it really takes is a little bit of personal intention to say, I'm going to stop and actually do it. And then when you actually do it and start to take control of these little things, you'll end up having a lot more control of your thoughts and reactions in daily life. Because the only thing, Jake, that we really have control of in life is the way that we react.
The way that we choose control of is how we react.
Yes. And we can choose to react to that in so many ways. We can look at something that could be completely negative, but turn that around because it's forced to be something positive. So we'd always need to just keep reframing our negative experiences to how can that make me better? How am I improving? And most of all, how am I now to where I was a year ago? Sometimes when we reflect on our own personal growth, we realize that we have come a lot further than we actually even thought. And that's another little motivator going, wow, you know, what I didn't realize that this time a year ago, I was stressed. I was doing this. Now when I look, things have slowed down. I'm doing a bit of Tai Chi, stretching, whatever. And we can start to look at the changes in our improvements. And then that will only make our life even better looking forward.
Absolutely. That's phenomenal. And I love how you're emphasizing that, like, what's within our control is how we react to something, how we consciously respond, and also how we subconsciously respond too. We're also responsible for that. And it's like focusing on what's within our locus of control, and instead of trying to control circumstances that are outside of ourselves.
Because we don't realize that a lot of the time we're actually in a trance. We're in our own personal trances, and we're talking to ourselves. And while we're talking to ourselves in these trances and these daydreams, we're programming our own subconscious unconsciously. We don't even realize that we're doing it. So this is where we need to start realizing again that these thoughts that we're having, the way that we're reacting to things, by grasping onto that and taking just some control of that, of the way you start to react, starts to create this effect, this avalanche effect of more and more and more. So just by always seeing that how far you've come, how far, what you can look at, how you can focus on something, and how you can change that perception, because the way that we feel most often becomes us. And I'll tell you a little story. For example, you have an old man, and 30 years ago, his wife passed away, and that was the love of his life. And he's angry about that. And for the last 30 years, he's been telling everyone how angry he is that God took away his wife. And now everybody knows him as the old angry man who complains about his wife that was taken away. And now it's become his identity. And he doesn't even realize it, that now his life's become a life of sorrow rather than a life of, you know what? My wife was the greatest wife ever. She may have been taken away, but those times we had would have created a new perspective and a new way that man would have been. So we got to realize that year after year, day after day, our thoughts are creating our personality. And often if someone's a grump, it's because they've had something that was made them upset. And they unfortunately got locked onto that feeling. And I want to get people out of that feeling, because everyone has felt joy in their life. We've all felt some time where we felt good about ourselves. And all we need to do is to go back to that time on what it was like when you just felt your hands were in the air and there was this release of like good emotion. And then realizing like, wow, that was actually in there. And then I can say, Jake, just talking about that joy and emotion now, what's happened?
Yeah, I'm feeling the joy and emotion. I'm thinking of that experience that's coming up to the surface.
And it makes us feel good. And these are the emotions that we need to get in touch with more. Because as humans, we have this unfortunate thing that we love to tell everyone about our problems, but we won't tell anyone how great we are or how good our day was. So if I've had a bad day, I'll happily tell you, Jake, how I got cut off on the way to work. This guy did this, this guy got this. But if I'm having a good day and you say, how are you, Aaron? I'm good. When we really should be saying, you know what, Jake, had a really good day. I actually saw this lady at the shop. She was so nice, gave me a piece of fruit. And we start to share more of our good experience with each other rather than our negative experiences, which we're locking in. And I think if we all started to tell each other something good that happened each day, we'd actually start cheering each other up more. And we'd all start getting more into that emotion of the joy and the sharing the good rather than focusing on stuff that we can't change.
Absolutely. I love that reframe of, you know, instead of speaking on the negative, let's share our positive experiences, because that's the emotions we feel, the stories we tell ourselves, those are the trances that we choose. Those are the states of consciousness, awareness that we choose. And that's who we become over time. Just like that example of the old man whose wife died. And, you know, for 30 years, that was his identity because he didn't intercept it. He chose a narrative that was, he created a self-prophecy that was not fulfilling. And so I'd like to know if there's any other like future projects or areas of study that you're excited about or you're pursuing now or hope to pursue in the future, like learning projects or courses or books that you're in the process of creating or coaching services you're offering.
So at the moment, I don't have anything coming up in the regards of literature or anything like that, but I've just been focusing on helping people with the internal martial arts, especially in my area of Queensland, Australia. We have a massive of martial artists. We have many people that do karate and things like that, and a lot of people have been interested in the internal martial arts, but really don't know where it fits in with what they're doing. So I'm like to proclaim that I'm certainly not an expert, but one thing about being an expert is you don't need to be the number one expert in the world to share something you know. So I find that if you know something three or four levels above someone, you are more than welcome to share what you know. So that's what I've done is as I increase my level of learning and experience, I share what I know to other people. So my goal is, if you need help and you want to just perform a little bit better and you're not looking at replacing your coach, but you're wondering, what are some small things that I can do that maybe my coach, because he has to focus on 30 students, doesn't have a chance to really focus on this. This is where I come in, where I can just do some tweaks. I can help you here, give you some tools to take home, which not only helps you, but helps your coach, helps your physical performance. And then when it comes to personal coaching, just by often talking to one another, we find that I can unlock things. Just by someone sharing what they think is a problem, just by speaking to it and being, another analogy, the really curious, loving grandmother. So what's that, dear? How would that help you? And what would that do for you? And by being curious, we end up getting that person to help themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome. Curiosity opens up so many doors. Yeah. So many doors. Is there anywhere where listeners or viewers are able to learn more about your work or engage with your training programs, books? Where can they find you, and what can they expect in terms of like resources you have to offer or coaching services? Do you do Zoom or just in person?
So regarding coaching, I often do Zoom. I also do in-person training. The Zoom sessions are more so for hypnotherapy and mind coaching. It's not as easy to do the physical stuff via Zoom. They can get in contact with me. Probably the easiest way is going to be via Facebook, and I'll just put my link down below and people can contact me there. I also have a YouTube channel called Art of Inner Power, where I conduct interviews and generally talk about martial arts and internal concepts. And I'm sure people find some interesting interviews there with Dinesh Kumar, Bob from 60 Skills, Chi Skills. So that's a good one there. And I also have another YouTube channel called Rokpa Mind Body Healing. And that's primarily just a meditation channel, which has healing music, scalar, graphics, and people just often listen to that to relax in the background and chill. So I'll end up sharing all those links with you. So the best thing to do is for people just to shoot me a message, tell me what they're at and what they want to achieve. Because there's no good saying that I can do this for you when it's not in the goal set.
Thank you so much for your time, for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Hope to speak with you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me, Jake, and we'll sure we'll talk again soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.